This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Final hour of Sharp Money here from VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, live from Las Vegas in the South Point Sportsbook Studio. I'm Ben Wilson in Patrick. We have Amal Shah here in studio. Dustin Sweelson behind the glass, and what a pleasure it is right now. We welcome him in studio. He's the Sports Betting Hall of Famer. Helps runs the joint around here with Chris Andrews, Jimmy Vaccaro. It's Vinny Maliulo. How you doing, Vinny?
Gentlemen, good to see you. Ben, Amal, Dustin, wow. How come we're not out surfing with Maher?
That's a good question.
How did this happen?
It's a good question.
We're not.
We don't get the invites.
Yeah, well, I didn't say we're good surfers, but anyway.
And Manhattan Beach gets pretty crowded if you've ever been. You know,
that's all right.
Hard to find.
Probably
parking.
Have more people to lean on, right? Can you do that?
That's
in surfing?
Why you got to go up to Zuma, north of Malibu. There's nobody up there. It's a perfect spot.
I know this is going to shock you guys. I tried surfing one time on Long Island. We were out
Jones Beach.
No, it was actually east. I was out. West Hampton, and there was a guy out there, and he had a surfboard. And we were all looking like, what do you surfboard? Like, you know, what the hell is the story with it? And we had this big raft. My buddies and I had this big, huge, rubber, ridiculous raft. So I said to the guy, we should try this. We should trade this guy just to see and say we tried it and, you know, did it. My buddies were like, no. So naturally, there was betting involved as to who would, you know, take a shot. I made sure that I secured the funds. And it's was definitely not my game. I can tell you that. I have a lot of respect for those folks that get up and on those boards.
Wow.
But yeah, I was at a couple of shots. That was it. I ended in one piece. I was just I didn't want to lose the guy's board. That was my biggest fear.
You're like, maybe I'll stick to the dice pit.
That was pre Jaws. After, you know, Benchley's book, I would have never even attempted it.
I don't blame you there. We saw some of that, unfortunately, I think in Florida this weekend.
Yeah, Florida. Off the coast of Long Island, too. So, yeah.
Who anyway. Knew? Vinny Maliulo, amateur surfer back in the day.
I wouldn't even consider him. It was, again, as usual, a lot of things I tried were on a bet.
Well, let's go to some things that you might have tried, or at least we were talking some NFL earlier, and we were kind of breaking down the NFC. I just want to get your point of view as you see it. We thought it's basically a 2.5 horse race in the NFC. Do you see anyone else as a contender outside of San Francisco and Philadelphia? And I'm going to throw in the Cowboys as that half a team there. But I think we're Ben, Dustin, and I were in agreement that you have those two teams, kind of Dallas sitting in third, and then everyone else behind them. How do you see it right now as we look at the futures board as we get towards the regular preseason and the regular season?
Yeah, good. I got to tell you guys, certainly. I mean, I don't necessarily want to say that it's the Eagles' division to lose or conference to lose, right? And, you know, when you look at, I mean, the Eagles are obviously the clear favorites. You have to lay a dime there. I think that the Cowboys are a viable playoff team. I don't think they're better than the Eagles, but I think that they have enough offense. And I think Dan Quinn is going to make some more adjustments defensively too, to make them better and competitive. As long as they can score points, I mean, which they can, I think they're going to be competitive. The Niners, I still think there were question marks at quarterback for the Niners. And even if Purdy comes back at the beginning of the season with the injury, he didn't have a particularly strong arm. Last year, I can't imagine it being stronger this year. You know, teams have had an opportunity now to look at film, and they'll make some adjustments. I think there's another team in the mix, and when you look at their draft, and when you look at some of their personnel, and there's going to be one big question mark at the most key position, and that's quarterback. I think Seattle's a dangerous team. I have to be honest with you, and bettors are kind of leaning that way too, and I've got the benefit of seeing how teams are getting bet in the future book, and the Seahawks are down to anywhere from 20 to 25 to 1 post draft, but during the course of the summer, and we had opened them at 50. So I think the Seahawks are a dangerous team.
Keep betting them, please.
I'm all not a believer in Seattle.
Well, I went through their schedule last year. First of all, you look at the games against the Niners. They scored a garbage touchdown with a few minutes left in the second half in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They were leading at the half, but they got dominated in the second half. The other two games, San Francisco dominated them at 21-3 in the fourth quarter, and they get an 86-yard block field goal for a touchdown. You look at their wins. They beat the Rams and Arizona four times combined. those two teams were some of the worst in the NFL, Ben. So for me, I'm not necessarily on board, Ben, at this point in time with Seattle. So you're looking at the other five wins came against some anemic teams. They did beat the Chargers, the Giants. The Giants got better later in the season. I don't think they were the same team when they played them early on. But down the stretch, again, Jets were a team that was under 500. Mm-hmm. I'm just not fully on board with the Seahawks team. And that's one of the things that when we look at teams from a negative standpoint, people dissect the schedule. And I just don't see when you look in depth at this team, they're just not up there with some of these other teams at an elite level, in my opinion.
Do you think they're better than they were a year ago, though?
Probably, but I think the Saints have probably the third best quarterback in the NFC.
I agree.
And I'm not a big Derek Carr guy, but when you look at the top eight teams, he's better than Geno Smith, Jared Goff, and some of these other names. And right now, for me, Seattle's good. I think Jackson Smith and Jigba and Witherspoon are going to be great additions from a rookie standpoint from them. I think they could potentially have the offensive and defensive rookies of the year on that team. However, I still think you have to take into consideration they beat a bad Denver team early in the season. That was a game where Denver mismanaged the clock late in that game.
Mismanaged is putting it kindly.
Yeah, exactly. They beat Detroit by 3 points. But if these guys played later in the season, I think a lot of people would have probably been on the Lions at that point in time. So, I respect your opinion. I'm just saying. But to me, this is one team I come out against very strongly. I just don't believe in the Seahawks that much. I think Geno Smith is who he is. It's not all of a sudden he goes to Seattle and Pete Carroll and them all of a sudden find the magic weapon. This guy's been a pedestrian quarterback most of his career, and now all of a sudden we're expecting him to be a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, well, but to your point, Vinny, when I think a lot of bettors look at what we just said. Seattle, even with all those things you laid out, a better team than last year. They see a 9-8 record for 2022, and they go, okay, 8.5 win total. I'm going to look to bet that thing over, and I would imagine where a lot of the interest is coming.
I just look at and Amal brought up another team that is favored in the division in terms of the Saints because they have the best quarterback in the division, whether you like them or you, if you look at the quarterbacks in that division. The other thing, guys, is when you're looking at the conference, like you could get a division that has three teams in the playoffs, and that's all you want, too, right, to give yourself a chance there. So I think that Seattle is certainly better than Arizona and the Rams. So can they get in and can they win a division? Yeah, they have to turn it around. It's going to come down to the two games, and I think they're both in the second half of the season within a month's time with the Niners. Certainly, health is going to come into play. I do think they've got a good special teams game. Their kicking game is very good, and I think their defense is good. So that should keep them in games as well. That's the reason why I think they could be a bit of a sleeper. But I do think the Saints – but, again, there's so much focus on the AFC because of all the quarterbacks and the quality quarterbacks there. So everybody's going to be focused on that. But you want to look at teams that you think could get to the postseason in the NFC in particular – not necessarily even win the division, but can they get there? And those are a couple of teams still at fair prices that you could probably look at.
Benny worked with me every day for 3 years, so he understands everything relates back to college football. Yes. This is like Tennessee beating Alabama. Now all of a sudden they think they're ready to win the SEC East. They go down to Athens and they realize they're still a mile behind the Georgia Bulldogs. That's how I feel about the Seattle Seahawks.
It's a pretty good comp. It's not bad.
That's how I feel about Seattle when it comes to the 49ers.
Injured quarterback comp too.
Correct. Over 8.5 is a pretty good bet on them because when you look at the rest of the conference and making the postseason, I think they've got a legitimate shot to make the playoffs. There's no doubt about that. I just don't think though that they're capable at this point in time of beating Philadelphia and San Francisco because in all likelihood, you're looking at a 1-2 seed for those two teams potentially. So you're at some point in time going to have to probably play both of them.
And you're at -130 now on that juice on the 8.5. So it has taken some action. And speaking of action, Vinny, we talked last week. You were expecting everybody, every odds maker in Vegas, expecting a huge 4th of July crowd. That crowd has come. Some of that crowd has now left. So there's some stragglers, some hangers on, but I know you were anticipating a lot of futures action being put down over the last week or so. So what ended up getting hit when all was said and done out here?
Saints with money, the Steelers. I was surprised that quite a bit of Steeler money. And I think, you know, we know that we're going to see the Steelers here. By the way, the Raiders have a terrific home schedule this year. I mean, besides the fact that we know that, you know, the Chiefs, and the Chargers and the Broncos and the Chiefs and Bronco fans travel exceptionally well. We see a lot of their fans here. But when you look at other games, I mean, the Packers, we know that Packers travel here. We have a tremendous New York transplant community here. So you're in the Jets and the Giants come here in back-to-back weekends. and Giants and Jets, I should say. The Steelers is the Raiders' home opener. Steeler fans travel exceptionally well, too. So when you look at, you know, and the way we look at it, too, is it's like last week, you know, event-driven destination. And the things that go on in conjunction with the sporting events and all of the gaming and the entertainment and dining options, I think this is going to be a terrific season at Allegiant.
By the way, do they think Kenny Stabler's or Jim Plunkett's playing quarterback? They've got four games on Sunday night and Monday Night Football this year? Holy cow, are you kidding me?
I think it's got a lot to do with, yes, there's a perception that the Raiders are going to be better, Amal, and the fact that it's still the Raiders. It's Las Vegas as much as the Raiders, honestly, to be honest with you, showcasing the city.
Goodell likes to get to Vegas?
Oh, he does. I don't know if he'll tell you that, but,
He's got a lot of comps he's got to use.
He's got a lot of comps.
You can't afford it when you made $64 million. That's kind of tough budget. Vegas has gotten expensive.
It took us enough years to convince the commissioner and his predecessors that this is a good spot.
Don't worry about it. One thing I know for sure. Everybody loves money. The love of money supersedes almost 99% of
things.
That's
right. Yeah.
We can set the over-under, too. And you mentioned those, Vinny, those marquee home matchups. Three of the four are in primetime, Sunday night or Monday night. Yeah. So can expect.
But there are also teams that people want to see, too.
Exactly.
I mean, Jets, people have high hopes for the Jets as well. So I think that's what's generated that.
At least, 30, 40,000 fans? Especially the Steeler fans? Maybe 50,000 terrible towels?
It'll be black and gold.
Yeah. Oh, lots of it.
No doubt. Can't wait for that. Vinny Maliulo, it's always great to see you, man.
Good to be with you guys.
Appreciate it. The Sports Betting Hall of Famer joins us in studio. Fun final hour for us on Sharp Money. Up next, Ned Coletti, former MLB general manager, stops by.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Final hour of Sharp Money here on VSiN. A big thanks to Vinny Maliulo from joining us in studio at the South Point. We're tracking some tennis, some baseball. Brewers just beat the Cubs. I'm also a solo homer from Victor Caratini. Bottom of the eighth ended up being the go-ahead shot. 6-5 Brew Crew, and that was much needed after the bullpen tried to blow it again, but they get the win there. And they're underway in the south side of Chicago. Blue Jays and White Sox just getting started. Lance Lynn on the bump. Nothing there in the top of the first. And we have a lot of baseball to talk about right now because Ned Coletti spent two decades in the game, first as a director of baseball operations for the Giants, and then most recently a whole decade as the LA Dodgers GM. Joins us right now. It's a great time to talk to you, Ned. We appreciate the time with us coming up on the All-Star break. We have the trade deadline coming up soon. I want to get your take on a pitcher you know very, very well because he's second right now on the NL Cy Young odds board, and that's Clayton Kershaw. Everybody wants to ask, okay, where's the longevity? Can he make it a full season? What's your take on the year we're seeing from Kershaw? It seems like he looks like he's in 2013 instead of 2023 when you watch him pitch every 5 days.
Well, he's obviously a Hall of Fame candidate and somebody that probably should be first ballot. He's got a little bit of a shoulder issue right now. And he's got a lot of innings on him. But he's somebody that competes all the time. And I think that this may be a chance with the break to give him a couple weeks off a little bit. But I think as long as he pitches, he's going to be a candidate to win the top award. Just who he is. You look at his numbers. Mm-hmm. You look at his productivity. About his competition, his compete. So he's one of those guys that always gives you a chance to win. As a GM, as a manager, you're always looking for that chance to win.
Ned, I'm going to put you on the spot. Being a former general manager, just down the road on I-5 there in Anaheim, the Angels have a big decision to make right now with Shohei Ohtani. As a free agent, it looks like he might wind up with the Dodgers, potentially the Mets or wherever else. If you are the Angels and you have an opportunity to get a good haul for him in terms of draft picks and young players in the minor leagues, would you make that move at this point in time if you're the Angels?
Well, before Mike Trout had his surgery a couple days ago or today, I guess. Probably not.
Sure.
But now you've got, I'd have to look at it differently now. What are our legitimate chances of winning a division or qualifying for the playoffs? And they know that far better than I do. But I think before, a week ago, I'd probably tell you, as long as we're in the race, at the end of July, I'd hold on. But now I'd have to think about it a little bit deeper. If we do fall out of it with the absence of another great player in Trout, of making that move, if you could get yourself two or three really high-end players, not guys that are perhaps, maybe, who knows, but I mean true high-end prospects, you'd have to think about it. It may actually, and this is a little bit of a circuitous answer, but it may actually help Anaheim's chances of re-signing him if he were to be traded and they were able to really shore up their farm system and add two or three bona fide players to it. Because if you listen to what, and nobody knows like Mr. Ohtani or his agency from CAA what he's thinking, but you know what you read is he wants to go someplace to win and compete for a long time. You know, a lot of the qualities you mentioned, the Dodgers, a lot of qualities that L.A. has, you know, north of Anaheim there. But, you know, who knows how he would react to being traded. But there's a chance that Anaheim could improve itself and be in a better position to re-sign him because their organization might be deeper, depending on what they could, who they could obtain for him.
It's a really interesting way to look at it, too, from the Ohtani perspective. Is Ned Coletti joins us, former Dodgers GM. Check out his book, by the way, if you haven't already. Really good read, The Big Chair, published a few years ago, available where all books are out there right now. And you think about it from the other side, too, Ned. If we think about if you're a GM of a contender and you know that you want to put a package together for Ohtani, how much does it change simply because of the fact that he is a player unlike any we have seen before in baseball, a dynamic two-way player who can pitch, who can hit at an elite MVP level? How much leeway would that give you as a GM as far as how big of a package you could actually put together because of the argument you could make about how amazing of a talent you're getting in return?
Well, there's no doubt that you'd be acquiring one of the greatest players ever traded at the deadline. You know, I was fortunate to acquire Manny Ramirez years ago, who for the last 2 months of the season and postseason had maybe the greatest run of any acquired player. I think he had 19 homers, 50 RBIs, whatever, hit almost 400. But you also have to know that, okay, you're going to make this two or three high-end prospect deal to acquire this player for the stretch run with no guarantee you're going to sign the player when it's over. So those are always tough to do if you're the GM because you're really mortgaging the future for this player probably in a large way in order to win this year. So I think you'd have to have the type of team that you thought you've got a legitimate chance to win it all, not just get into it and not just maybe survive one round, but really the legit chance to win the World Series, because you're gonna, it'll be a while, most likely, unless you're going to be able to re-sign him before you're going to be able to do that again if you're trading two or three high-end prospects to do it. Anaheim also, if they're going to trade this player, as much as he means to their franchise, you know, they're going to have to be sure that they're not just getting extra men or people who are going to play once in a while. You know, they need real players coming back.
I love the point you made there. Ned, I want to ask you something from a personal standpoint. If you're in a front office chair, the general manager, not just the GM of the team, but you're looking at your longevity, because one of my knocks on the front office in baseball is they don't sign GMs to long enough contracts. I think you're better off signing a GM to a 7-year deal because it's a lot less expensive than paying some guy overpaying for a 7 to 10 year deal. And then it kind of strangleholds the team going forward. I feel like some decisions are made just a hasty decision to win immediately, like you alluded to. You know, if you sign the guy, can you legitimately win a World Series, or if you trade for him? So as a GM, when you're looking to make this move, is there sometimes a thought process for a general manager who might be on the hot seat? Let's make this move. It might hurt the team long term down the line, but in the short run, it may give me job security and an opportunity to get to an LCS or a World Series.
Well, I mean, it's a possibility. That's the thought process. I can tell you it was never my thought process.
Sure.
My number one responsibility is to the organization and to do what is best for the organization. Even in my last couple of years, we had chances to do deals that would have helped us for 2 or 3 months, but wouldn't help us the long, you know, for the long haul. And you know, I refuse to do deals like that. You know, we had a young Corey Seager, a young Cody Bellinger. We had a lot of great young talent, a young Jock Peterson, a lot of great young talent that was sitting in the minor leagues. But you know, we weren't gonna change the future of a club for a short-term gain. I don't think that's, just in my opinion, I don't think that's the right way to do it.
Yep.
Do we make big deals anyway? Yes, but for players that were not of the ilk of a Corey Seager, for example.
Mm-hmm. Ned Coletti, former MLB general manager, joining us right now on Sharp Money. Follow him at Real Ned Coletti. Before we let you go, Ned, think about a team we have had a lot of discussions on this network recently, the New York Mets, where you've already invested so much and you still are on the outside looking in. How would you approach things heading up into the deadline if you're the front office for the Mets right now?
That's a tough question. Again, you got to be – I think one of the most important things in professional sport is, and probably in almost any business, is to really evaluate your team, your staff, whatever, truly. Not make it more than it is or less than it is, but to be as accurate as you possibly can when you make your decisions going forward. You can talk yourself into anything, but you got to be wise with your choices, and you got to be wise with where is your team at. You know, money is great to have financially for teams. It allows teams to make mistakes and go and acquire somebody else to fill that role. But irregardless of how much you have to spend, you have to make the right choices, and you have to be as realistic, I guess, is probably the best word, mm-hmm. one of the best words, to figure out where you're at and what you're able to do, because you can keep adding, but if you don't have the core to do it, and if you're too far out to do it, you know, are you really going to go heavy for 2 months, 3 months? And you know, and finish 5 games out, not 10 games out. You know, that's not going to do you any good.
No doubt.
So you got to be realistic with where you're at.
And you're 5-1 right now, underdog, the Mets, to make the playoffs. Ned, thank you so much for the time. Kanta, thank you enough for all the insights. We appreciate it.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Again, Ned Coletti joining us here on Sharp Money. We'll transition. Little NBA coming up next. Evan Sidery, Forbes NBA insider, will join us right after this here on VSiN.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Use promo code VSiN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. By the way, we haven't updated this in a while, Amal, but Andy Murray up a break now in the third set. They're tied one set all against Stefanos Tsitsipas. 27 unforced errors for the Greek, Stefanos Tsitsipas. So
hopefully Murray can hold on here.
Hopefully. Let's go. It's been a fun match so far, though. Murray up 5-3 right now. I like where we're at, though, with this. Murray looking very good at the moment. We have some more NBA talk to get to, though, right now. We'll circle back, talk some tennis in the last break, as well as some of our plays for the rest of the night tonight. But we want to get all the deets on what's going on in NBA free agency, some of these trade rumors going on. Evan Sidery, Forbes NBA insider, joins us right now. Give him a follow at @esidery on Twitter. And everybody wants to know, first and foremost, Evan, about what's going on with Portland and how this Damian Lillard trade request situation is going to play out. What's the latest you're hearing on how the GMs on the Portland side and Miami and Dame's camp, how is everybody right now reacting and feeling after a few days to settle in after this request was made?
Yeah, it's kind of feeling like each side's camp is digging in pretty hard to the point where it might get a little ugly behind the scenes between Lillard and his camp and the Blazers. They try to find the right deal for Damian Lillard. And from the Blazers' side of things, they don't want to give up Damian Lillard for peanuts or pennies on the dollar. And that's what the Heat are offering. They're not giving up much of their young guys. They're not going to give up much of their picks. They're going to have to reroute Tyler Herro to a third team to help facilitate that deal. But Portland does not want to help Miami out here. They want peak value. When you see superstar trades that we've seen recently, like Kevin Durant getting 4 first-round picks, Rudy Gobert getting 4 first-round picks, and a lot of young players, even going back to the Anthony Davis trade, you get Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart and multiple picks in that trade as well. Without the Heat set up right now, they can offer Portland just two picks 60-plus years down the road, a pick swap, and a couple of intriguing young guys like Nikola Jovic or Jaime Jaquez they just drafted in the first round this year. But that's definitely way off the scale of what really usual superstar trades are. So Portland's digging in here. They want to find a team that can help them get more draft capital and more assets in the process. And Lillard and his camp are adamant about ending up with the Miami Heat. He only wants to play for the Miami Heat. So this could drag out a little longer. I would not be surprised at all if this goes into August now, just based off of it seems like Damian Lillard's hell-bent on going to the Miami Heat. And I think Portland is really digging in themselves and not wanting to give up for cheap value either.
Evan, I can't disagree with Portland's perspective, but when you look at it, generally big trades are made before the draft in these scenarios. I mean, to me, if you're Portland, you've got to maximize what you can get. You mentioned the Rudy Gobert trade. Is there a realistic scenario where they get at least some fair market value on this? And if he doesn't wind up in Miami, what happens with Damian Lillard either in Portland or what's a secondary place you think he could land?
Yeah, so that's a really good one because when you think about the situation, definitely Miami can't offer what Portland's looking for. Portland's looking for young players, draft capital, salary cap relief, all in the one there. And there are multiple teams that can easily beat out Miami's offer pretty quickly. And one team I mentioned before that I think makes a lot of sense as far as an underdog here, but it's like there's really not much smoke around them, would be the Brooklyn Nets. They have all the draft capital from the Kevin Durant trade, the Kyrie Irving trade. They have some young pieces as well they can throw into the mix for salary cap purposes. I think they make a lot of sense for a underdog sleeper team. And also, I would say Utah Jazz as well, just because they have all the ammunition from those draft trades they made in the past with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. But it sounds like from Damian Lillard and his camp, he is adamant on Miami and only Miami. And His agent, Aaron Goodwin, has reportedly let it be known that his client, Damian Lillard, would be disgruntled if he were to end up somewhere else and might try to sit out in some situation, which would be pretty shocking to see from Damian Lillard. But it just sounds like he's trying to force his way to Miami there. And I really think Portland is just in a tough spot here because they can't get up Damian Lillard for really low value, historically low value for superstar trades. But also, if they send him somewhere else other than the Miami Heat, everyone else in the league is watching how this plays out. And this could be a domino effect where if he goes somewhere else that he doesn't want to with 4 years left on his contract, you might see stars in the future try to request those no-trade clause in their contracts like Bradley Beal did and try to force their way here. So this kind of feels like a really important moment for the NBA where the Blazers are not going to fold to Lillard's demands. But now with player empowerment nowadays, they kind of run the league. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this back and forth plays out.
Ben, I love the point that Evan made there about Aaron Goodwin, but I'll tell you right now, if I were the Portland Trailblazers and Joe Cronin, to Aaron Goodwin, I'd say, well, good luck. He can sit out and cut into some of that $50 million a year he's making. You've got to make a move that's best for your franchise.
No doubt. Well, and we're seeing that now not only happen in Portland, Evan, but you think about what's happening with the James Harden situation in Philadelphia, and I keep thinking back to where the LA Clippers are at, because in the midst of all this, like there's a potential where we could see a three-team or multiple-team trade as far as Damian Lillard goes. Same thing could happen as far as James Harden. Where do you view the Clippers to stand like within all of this? Like, are they a team that actually wants Harden right now? What's their mindset here going into all this, since they could play a focal point in a number of these deals?
So they could. I think that they're probably out on Damian Lillard. I just don't think they have the assets to make sense there as far as draft capital goes after the Paul George and Kawhi Leonard moves in the past there. I think they make a lot of sense for James Harden, but Philadelphia is, we know with Daryl Morey in the past, when he wants to get rid of a player, he wants peak value back in return. And we saw him sit on Ben Simmons in his contract for almost 8 months until he was traded eventually for James Harden. I don't ever get to that point exactly with Philadelphia with James Harden as far as that goes, but I think Los Angeles, they do have the assets to make it work. They have Terrence Mann. They have a couple picks in the future way down the road. They have expiring contracts. And Marcus Morris, Robert Covington, Nicholas Batum. But according to Zach Lowe of ESPN, the Clippers are reluctant to give up Terrence Mann in any deal, which is surprising a little because Terrence Mann doesn't even average 25 minutes per game for the Clippers, but he's a very important role player for that team. So I think they're just trying to stronghold the Sixers here. James Harden does not want to be with the Sixers anymore, but it does sound like behind the scenes that James Harden and the Sixers might be working towards maybe a one-year trial run again, because Daryl Morey reportedly wants to keep James Harden around next year. He's going to try to convince him to stay in Philadelphia for one more year. And that could be really interesting, because if James Harden does indeed stay next year on an expiring contract, sure, the Sixers will be running it back there. But that's a flight risk to bring back James Harden into that locker room for sure and see how that plays out. So it kind of feels like both these superstar deals with Harden and Lillard are kind of in a stalemate here where these both might drag out into August.
Evan, are we talking about James Harden because it's July 6th or 7th and there's not much else to talk about? Or is he actually a legitimate player, in your opinion, that if he goes to the Clippers with PG and Kawhi Leonard, changes the dynamic potentially of the Western Conference?
I would say James Harden is definitely not a superstar anymore, but I would say he's still an all-star level player. A player can give you around 20 points per game and 10 assists per game, which is really valuable still in today's league. And you put him next to Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, that's obviously a trio of stars there that you not really reliable as far as injuries goes. And I would not be shocked if all three of those guys got hurt at some point next season if that were to happen. But with how all in the Clippers are already on Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and how it has not gone well over the last 3 or 4 years, if you can get James Harden for cheap, just for expiring contracts, maybe a pick swap or two down the road, why not roll the dice, try to get a championship? I think James Harden on that Clippers team, they brought back Russell Westbrook as well. I think that could be a top four team in the West next year. That's certainly not any guarantee on that as far as that goes, but I think a healthy James Harden, and obviously health is the caveat with all these guys there, with PG, Kawhi Leonard, and James Harden, but if all of those guys stay healthy, I think they're a legitimate 50-plus win team next season.
It's so interesting to see that Harden now, odds on him to for where he will play next. Clippers are the favorite at minus 180. We've talked about Lillard a couple times today and throughout the week, minus 275 to go to the Heat. That is the favorite team for him. Evan, as far as the San Antonio Spurs, they've been kind of floated around as this team that could make some moves because they have a lot of assets. They've got a lot of room. They just bring in Victor Wembanyama. How aggressive do you expect them actually to be this summer when you consider you have Wembanyama, but there's still a lot of development that has to happen for a rookie coming in right away?
Yeah, and they have a really exciting young core, too, outside of Wembanyama. Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, a couple other names, too, that are really intriguing long-term for them. Jeremy Sohan from Baylor, who was a top pick last year. But I think San Antonio, they're one of the few teams remaining, even after acquiring Reggie Bullock's $10 million salary yesterday in that three-team trade for Grant Williams, that sign-and-trade where the Mavericks got him. They still have around $15 million in cap space, and they also have a couple contracts in Zach Collins, Doug McDermott, Devontae Graham, that come up to about $30, $40 million there, and they could easily get involved, I think, in this Damian Lillard talks, not to get Lillard themselves, but to help facilitate that trade. If they want to get draft capital in return for taking on those salaries, and Tyler Hero and Yusuf Nurkic, both sides, Miami and Portland, want to get off those salaries. And we mentioned before that San Antonio, they view Victor Wembanyama more as a four immediately than a five. So having Nurkic in there as a starting center next season would take a lot of pressure off of Wembanyama. Tyler Hero in that Spurs system with Greg Popovich, with Victor Wembanyama running pick and roll, that'd be a lot of fun for Hero's development too. So I would certainly keep an eye under the radar. I think San Antonio, they move in silence a lot as far as transactions go, but I would not be stunned at all if that's the realistic team to look out for to help facilitate that Damian Lillard trade.
Don't forget about my guy, CeeDee Sissoko, either. Second round draft pick. G League, ignite them all.
Well, he didn't mention my guy, Malachi Branham. Okay. That's okay. I won't hold it against him.
Okay, come on. Easy does it. Evan Sidery, outstanding NBA insider for Forbes. You must follow at eSidery. Evan, great stuff. We really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Meanwhile, as we hit a breakable, crazy scenes at Wimbledon on center court. Andy Murray takes a bad spill. A few players have slipped today behind the baseline. Murray was in a ton of pain. He gets up and with set point, puts a first serve in. Stefanos Tsitsipas can't even put a ball in. Didn't even make Murray play out the point. Murray wins the set, but he looked to be in a ton of pain. He's up 2-1. Big favorite now on the live line. What a moment there at center court.
Wow. It's going to be interesting to see if he's going to continue or not. I know they're taking some sort of break. Is there rain coming that they're going to close the roof?
I think the roof's already closed.
That's right. I think
the darkness is already there as well. We have one more segment before the darkness comes on this show. We'll have our best bets for the rest of the night when we come back to Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
It's always football season here at VSIN, which is why we've already released our NFL betting guide. Our NFL betting guide will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSIN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and get your digital copy of the VSIN NFL betting guide, or take advantage of our summer kickoff special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. Sign up today at VSIN.com/subscribe. Speaking of NFL, it's been a fun show today because, Amal, you found out a team you're betting on today.
Yeah, I think, you know,
funny how that works.
Well, I mean, look, it's going to come down to the futures market, but the 49ers at plus 450 are a pretty intriguing team. I think it's a pretty good price. I think the number will eventually descend a little bit when we get the update on Brock Purdy. But I'm not as concerned. I think that's the one team. And, Dustin, we talked about this last week. You take over the quarterback position, not only are they the most talented team in the National Football League, but they're head and shoulders above everyone else from a talent standpoint.
Yeah. It's there. Dustin, you agree?
I can't argue. Yeah.
And once. The Saints are your other team today that you've
Potentially looking at them for the division.
Found
absolutely
out that,
yeah.
that could be the beneficiary there.
Here's what we've learned on this show. This show has been happening since the end of February.
February 28th.
Yeah, 27th.
Oh, is it 27th? Okay.
Fact check you on that.
Thanks. I knew Dustin would know. Knew he would know.
Because my life forever changed. Amal and I disagree on a lot of things, but what's really freaking me out is we agree on a lot of football futures and a lot of football projections of things, which should terrify both of us that we agree, because only bad things can come from this.
I'm not worried because I'm very confident in my position, so I'm good.
Have some self-confidence, Dustin.
No, I get concerned when Amal and I are on the same side. Normally, we're yelling at each other about Julio Urias.
It's funny you said that. I was just about to say, I didn't think he was going to say that. I was going to say, about Urias? Yeah, exactly.
That's great. That's tremendous. Speaking of the baseball, Dustin, you have action tonight?
No, I do. Yeah, unfortunately, I've got to come back from this loss with the Cubs. I really liked Stroman today. Every time I think that your Brewers offense is just going to do nothing, they somehow find a way to score runs and win games. So you and I are aligned. I'm going to take the Orioles minus $1.34. Bradish is just better than Severino. I trust the Baltimore offense more than the Yankees offense. Severino's been really, really bad of late. Let's just take that and forget about even doing any more analysis. I don't think there's any way that the Mets go to Arizona and sweep the Diamondbacks. Carlos Carrasco has been terrible over his last five starts, his ERA over six. And I think this Diamondbacks team should have won last night. I think they'll end up winning today. They'll salvage one out of the three in this series. So minus 134 in Arizona. Also going to take Nate Eovaldi back in his old stomping grounds at Fenway Park. Minus 138 on Texas. I hate having a day where I look at all my bets and they're all just favorites, but sometimes that's just the way things go.
It's the way the card goes. I like Baltimore. Best number you can find, minus 125 on the Orioles. And Kyle Bradish does not get the respect he deserves. Guy has three quality starts in his last four, seven straight starts allowing three runs or less. And he gets a Yankee offense that's just been abysmal the last month. 26 in overall WRC plus, which I like using them all to give a general sense on how these offenses are performing.
Sure.
From top to bottom. And even on the overall season, Yankees, bottom 10 offense against righties, top 10 against lefties. Luis Severino, 6.30 ERA in his eight starts this year going for the Yankees. Give me Baltimore every day of the week.
I love that you said put some respect on their name, because do you know who initially coined that phrase, put some respect on my name? Birdman, and the Orioles are the Birds.
It all comes together. Who knew? Dustin Sweetelson.
I like the Rays. I like the Rays today. They've lost four in a row. They're at home against Philadelphia, trying to avoid the sweep. In this matchup here, they're facing a left-hander in Christopher Sanchez for Philadelphia. Rays batting .278 as a team against lefties, .258 versus righties. Taking the run line here, minus a run and a half, get a pretty good number at plus +150. Ben, I'm a big fan of teams that are on a losing streak that are good, like Tampa. I think they'll bounce back in this particular spot at home. Overall, even though, again, like I mentioned, they lost the first two games in this series, this team has been really dangerous at home this year, 34-12. So good bounce back spot.
And I love this bet, Amal. Well, I think it's a great play.
You get plus +150 on the run line. I'll take my chances here. This is a team that's won 75% of their games by two runs or more in their 57 wins this year. So good opportunity if you're a run line better like myself.
Love it. That's a great angle. As far as the tennis for tomorrow, two plays for me looking at, and we combined 5-2 overall, right? Between the two of us?
You went 1-0, I went 4-2. Yeah.
I contributed.
No, that was better than contributing. Right, you went 100%.
As a group, what was our combined record?
5-2. Dustin. Yeah. Short money went 5-2. I'll go plus +143. Matteo Berrettini, believe he should be favored against Alex de Minaur. Berrettini looks to be back and healthy on a surface where he has had tremendous success, 34-8 lifetime. On grass, a former Wimbledon finalist. Now that he's healthy, his serve looked lights out today in a first-round win. I'll take him over de Minaur as a dog. And give me Sophia Kenin, short favorite on the women's side. You look at where Kenin is at, getting a player in Elena Svitolina, who is coming off a long absence, gave birth to a child, recently got married. She played two pretty out-of-form players in her first two rounds, did Svitolina, including Venus Williams in round one. Kennen has had a long road back from injury, but a former Grand Slam champion is in a great position. I like her position in a coin flip matchup like this. Saw her just getting an updated number here. Kennen, minus 130 is your consensus number right there, Amal. Those are my two for tomorrow.
Not a bad play at all. I haven't really gone through the tennis card yet as much, but I know I'll be on the favorite to put him in a parlay. Madison Keys, Katrina Alexandrova, Petra Kvitova, some of these bigger favorites. Look, at the Grand Slams, the amount of money you make by advancing on is so huge. You get much more focused at the higher level in terms of the elite players, and we see so many of them advancing on, so I'll take them. And then once you start to get into the Andreescu and Kalinina matchups, you have so many of these coin tosses. I would look at some of the underdogs in these types of matchups.
Great way to look at it. All right, Dustin, we'll see. No plays for Dustin because he doesn't watch or bet tennis.
No, he's going to have some tomorrow when we come on the show.
Of course. Definitely. It's
they're show bets. If you guys win, I win.
Yeah, obviously. That's definitely how that goes. By the way, because we just to tie the knot on what ended up happening for today's Wimbledon, they have a curfew at 11 p.m. British time. So a very bad job by me setting my hypothetical finishing timeline.
Like the city has a curfew?
Yeah. Wimbledon has a curfew. So, but no, here's what's crazy. Andy Murray gets hurt 1 point before winning the third set. On the point he wins the third set, Stefanos Tsitsipas didn't make him do anything. Didn't even put a ball in play. So Murray now gets an entire night to recover from that injury. He's up 2-1, and the live market is up. Murray, I'll just get the updated number here.
I would just fake injuries like this all the time then.
Well, you better hope.
They would have stopped the match anyway.
Yeah, they were going to stop the match regardless.
Murray minus 220 right now. I'm all sits a bus plus 170. But that's a massive break for Murray, the fact that they will not keep playing, because he definitely looked worse for wear there.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Let's go to Dustin's top 10 fast food items here. And I'm a little bit shocked by this, but please break it down.
All right, we're doing my top 10 fast food value menu items, as I've noted all week on the program. This is a dying thing among fast food restaurants. These value menus are getting shorter and shorter, and they're not quite as much of value as they used to be. Like, there is no more dollar menu at McDonald's. However, we kick things off with Jack in the Box at $1 for two tacos. Horrible tacos. They taste like garbage, but it's a great deal. Number 9 is Wendy's Junior Frosty. Number 8 was the McDonald's Egg Biscuit, under $2 for that. Number 7, the Taco Bell Cheesy Roll-Up. Number 6 was the Rodeo Burger over at BK. Taco Bell Spicy Potato Soft Taco came in at number 5, which leads us now to 4 and 3, where McDonald's goes back-to-back. The number 4 item on this list is the McChicken. Not available everywhere, but it's super solid across the board. I'm sure we all went to schools growing up that served a chicken patty sandwich at some point, and the chicken patty day was the best day of the month, if you ask me, during school service for lunch. And then number 3... the McDouble still comes in pretty strong. Not quite the value it used to be, but you got
two. How much are those individually now? Because it used to be a buck for each, and
you could
combine.
It's like $1.89 now, I want to say.
Okay. So adjusted for inflation, that's not,
I'm being told $3.19 for one McDouble?
Whoa!
Wow.
I mean, yeah.
Yikes, that's not
a
value anymore.
When I was in high school, you'd always get the McDouble and a McChicken. You would combine them, and it
McGang
was...
Bang?
I don't know if we're allowed to say that.
I don't know if we're allowed to say that.
I literally was going to say, I don't think we're allowed to say that on the air. Dustin just said it, but...
It's not a real word.
I guess it's not. But in certain jurisdictions, it was known as something else. So like in Wisconsin, when I was in high school, Joe Thomas was an offensive lineman for the Wisconsin Badgers. And was rumored to get 3 of those before every high school football game. So they named that the McDouble McChicken combo after Joe Thomas, went on to a great career in the NFL, now an NFL Network analyst. So.
And now he doesn't eat carbs.
Now he doesn't. Now he looks very. Yeah, he might be. Is he skinnier than you now?
I'm fatter than everyone.
I didn't mean that in that sense.
He's also 6'7".
Right. So that's fair. Anyway.
He's looking svelte.
Yeah. I mean, Amal and I can't add much because we're not big. Like, I can't remember the last time I went to McDonald's. So you said you had 2 items from your list today before the show, or is it those? Was it
number,
those two?
The ones that the number 2 on the list, I ate 2 of today for lunch. Oh. Have to find out what that is tomorrow.
I know what it is. Oh,
man. Can you give us a good closing tab? You had a stat on Canada?
Yeah. So I learned this fact this morning that Canada has more trees than there are stars in the Milky Way galaxy.
Wow.
There are around 300 billion trees in Canada, 100 billion stars in the Milky Way.
Did you know the province of Ottawa has over 1 million lakes?
Wow.
Yeah. Just found that out.
Yeah, it's all the land we didn't feel like taking
over. Crazy. a good point. Good way to end the show. For Dustin Sweetelson, for Amal Shah, Amal, blast being with you this week. It's
been
fun.
Same here. Thank you. Lots of fun.
Ben Wilson saying so long. We have VSiN Primetime coming up next. Tim Murray, Sean King, take it from here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.